working this time? You better give me some little clues about what they start with.
When were you born?
Oh, I was born in Seattle, Washington.
Mm-hmm. And did you grow up and go to school?
And I grew up there and lived north of the University of Washington and went through school and all the way from first grade through the University of Washington.
Oh, all in the same place?
Tremendous.
Mm-hmm. When did you decide to come to Alaska? Have you always had that in mind?
No, I was teaching in a small town about 40 miles from Seattle. And I had taught there 4 years, and that was back in the 30s. And in those days, if you wanted to teach, you started in a small country school and worked your way up to maybe a larger school, bigger town. So I had gone to the University of Washington and asked them to help me see if I could find another position. And one day they called me and said there was an opening at Fairbanks, Alaska. Would I be interested in having my credentials sent up? So I gulped 2 or 3 times and said yes. And then 3 weeks later, I had a telegram saying that I had the job up here in Fairbanks.
What year was that? 1939. Boy.
And I got my position because the woman who was the commercial teacher up here decided to get married. And in those days, there was a clause in the contract which said, marriage voids this contract.
That's really interesting.
So when she decided to get married in the middle of the summer, then that left an opening.
She
lost her job. And I came up, and later on, when the war started, they didn't want people coming to Alaska. So they let married women teach then. Right. Right, and it was a matter of the military being responsible for the people up here and afraid that the Japanese, and of course eventually the Japanese did attack down in the Aleutian Islands. And in those days, in order to come to Alaska, you had to be fingerprinted and you had to prove that you had a job, and this was after the war started. Before they would let you come up. In those days, Pan American was flying from Fairbanks to Seattle, and that took about 8 hours to fly. When, of course, my first trips up, I came by boat, and I think that's the only way to come to Alaska. I really feel sorry for all these people who just fly in and arrive. And haven't seen all the that whole week's trip that it used to take to come by boat. And then a lot of people would come in by train from Seward, but I came by bus from Valdez. Because there are other teachers on board ship that very first trip up, and it was kind of a teacher special because the teachers all took the last boat north that would get them to their place to teach on time. And so there were a number of teachers. So there were other teachers getting off the ship at Valdez and took the bus. We stopped the first night. Well, it was late afternoon when we got off the ship, and then we stayed overnight at Tomsina.
How old were you then?
Well, I was about 26, I guess, when I first
was it there. Were you frightened or was it exciting or how did
you Well, I didn't know anybody up here, but both my parents had visited here at one time. And then, in fact, my mother and father, on their honeymoon back in about 1908 or somewhere around there, went to Nome. My dad was a lawyer, and he had to go up for a business up there, so they went on their honeymoon, and they went in September and took the last boat out then, and of course the boat was crowded then, and even though it was their honeymoon, my mother was in a cabin with 5 other women and my dad was over in another cabin with all men because it was the last boat out. And so anyway, they my parents, you know, thought it was all right for me to come this far north, even though I didn't know anybody. So it was an exciting trip.
Okay, well,
oh, 3,000 people, small town. 120 students in the whole high school. Mm-hmm. Of course, now there are five high schools in the area. But it was really nice because we had a lot of fun. We had to meet. There were no radio station in town here. There was no TV. You couldn't drive. You could drive to Valdez, but you couldn't drive to the States. And so we had to make our own entertainment. And the town was very social. I mean, lots of people gave dinners, and there were loads of dances. And I happened to get in with two other women who were teachers. And in those days, we didn't make very much money, so it took three of us to pay the $75 a month rent. We had to pay for an apartment. And they both liked to ski.
Mm-hmm.
So I got equipment and started in skiing too. And we had just a nice group of fellas and girls, about an even number, about six apiece. And every Sunday we'd go skiing, mm-hmm. unless it was colder than 20 below, and we'd go mm-hmm. out to Birch Hill. And then we'd usually come back, and the girls would take turns fixing up supper then, and we'd go to dances, and we'd go to the movies, or we'd just be at home and play games. As I said, we had to provide our own entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Probably just great, lot more social life. I mean, being with people.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Because otherwise, if you didn't join in, I mean, you were just left out of everything. Mm-hmm. You would be.
Mm-hmm.
And all the women teachers were single,
mm-hmm.
and young, and most of them married.
Mm-hmm.
Then, but there were many more men than women up here in those days. Well, mm-hmm. there still are, but especially them. A lot of those young fellows had come up to go mining in the summer. And of course, they were, some were attending the university.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just really had a lot of fun. We really did.
That's a great place for a woman in
the city. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
And we really enjoyed it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting to see, 39, how long did you teach until?
Well, I taught until 1977.
Wow.
Here at Brent. I started out at the old main school there on mm-hmm. Cushman, which had kindergarten through 12th grade. The high school was on the top floor, and the elementary had the two other floors. 1955, Lathrop High School was opened.
Come on in! Come on in! Excuse me.
Let's see.
Can you see something? No.
Yeah. Are you checking it out again?
Yeah, I'm checking to see if we're recording. I don't
know. Oh, okay. So we're checking out to see if it's recording?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay, go ahead.
Now it's recording, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that influenced my life is that I had friends who liked to travel, and not only that, but my mother liked to travel and had encouraged me to do a lot. And in 1956, she made the arrangements in Seattle, and then there were two other Fairbanks teachers and I, the four of us, went around the world.
Oh, my.
In the summer.
How did you do that?
100 days we were gone.
Oh.
She flew Northwest Airlines from Seattle to Anchorage, and we joined her in Anchorage. And then we flew over to Japan and did the Orient, and went over through India and up into Kashmir,
mm-hmm.
went on over then into Europe, and got down into Spain and Portugal. I had never been there before, but that was really interesting. And then up through the continent too, and over into England, and then flew back. And we were gone 100 days. It was kind of a long trip, though, but my mother was 75 years old.
Holy smoke.
And
well, you're 75 now.
Well, not quite, but I'm getting close. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she was out in front of us all the time. Mm-hmm. She just had enjoyed traveling during her lifetime and stuff. And then after that, let's see, that was 1956. Then in 1961, President Kennedy started the Peace Corps. And I don't know, I had taught here long enough in Fairbanks so that I had my retirement protected if I were to leave. But I decided that I would ask for a leave of absence, which I did. And I applied to the Peace Corps, and the next spring I had a notice from them saying that I had been accepted and that I would be going to Ethiopia. And I thought, oh goodness, I just can't stand that because I can't stand the heat. That's, I guess, why I live in Alaska. But I decided I would go and try it and see what it was like. So I spent 8 weeks at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., training. Mm-hmm. And there were 275 in our group, and that was the largest Peace Corps group at that time that had gone overseas. And we were going over to Ethiopia because the rate of literacy there was 5%. And we were all going as high school teachers.
High school teachers?
In order, because so few students ever got, you know, beyond the first few grades if they did get into school at all. And they didn't have teachers. And so they...
Elementary school?
Yeah, they needed elementary school teachers, and a lot of times when the youngsters would say get through the sixth grade, then they'd want to get a job and be a third grade teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to have it so that they would have more education.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
And so I taught in a teacher training school. Mm-hmm. Where we were training juniors and seniors in high school to go out to be elementary teachers. And they were young men, 18 to 22,
oh,
mostly.
Yeah.
I think we had about three women.
Why is that?
Well, it's just like so many other places. The men, the woman's position was to be in the home, bear and raise the children, and
mm-hmm.
keep the home.
That was in the 60s, okay.
So anyway, I went over there, and I was stationed in Addis Ababa, which was the capital.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not in the bush, although many of the volunteers in my group were out in the bush. And everything above the sixth grade was taught in English
mm-hmm.
in Ethiopia. Of course, that's no longer true now.
Mm-hmm.
So I was teaching in English, but I had learned enough Amharic, which is the language of the country, and it's the only country in which it's spoken.
How do you spell it?
A-M-H-A-R-I-C, Amharic. Mm-hmm. And I did not learn it as well as a lot of the volunteers did. But I could go shopping and I could speak it, but many of the volunteers learned to read and write it also.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I went over there and found that Addis Ababa was 8,000 feet high. So it was the most pleasant climate you could imagine, because when you were in the sun it was warm, but if you stepped in the shade it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like a rainy season and their dry seasons and things. But anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed the work, although the first year you wonder about a whole lot of things when you're so far away from home and in such foreign circumstances. But however, we were supposed to live like Ethiopian teachers, but we were living on a level far above what they were living on, because
mm-hmm.
there were three of us living in a house, and we had running water and a flush toilet. And whereas we would not drink the water until we had boiled it for 20 minutes, and then we could drink it, and we would be very careful about things that we ate. I mean, when we had, if we wanted lettuce for a salad, we would wash it, soap and water, leaf by leaf,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then rinse it with the water which we had previously boiled before
mm-hmm.
we'd eat. I mean, we tried to be careful, mm-hmm. right, because you were sure to get something bad if you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I had 2 years over there. The first year went rather slowly, but the second year I used to wish I could stop time because there were so many things I wanted to do before I was to leave. But it was really a very wonderful experience, and you came back appreciating your own country
mm-hmm.
a lot,
mm-hmm.
a whole lot more,
mm-hmm.
seeing how the other half lives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I came back, and since I was on a leave of absence from my position here in Fairbanks, I had a position waiting for me then in the high school again as a commercial teacher.
Did you find yourself, did it enrich your teaching?
Well,
yourself, from, and therefore it did enrich your teaching?
Yes, it affected my teaching in that I was much more tolerant
mm-hmm.
of a lot of things. And could see that maybe a lot of the things you used to think were pretty important weren't really quite that important after all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I came back though and went back to teach here in Lathrop, and I did then and stayed until I retired. But then after I retired, I mean, just going on with traveling, the first year after I retired, my retirement trip, I decided I'd take a trip on the Mississippi River on the Delta Queen.
Mm-hmm.
So I went from New Orleans all the way north to Minneapolis.
Mm, that was a great trip. Uh-huh.
So then I have a friend, my friend that lives there in the Northrop Building, and when she retired 2 years later, we went to Antarctica.
Oh, my.
And we spent 3 weeks down there, and we visited the Falkland Islands and many of the other islands, and then we were on the mainland down there in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fantastic trip because you didn't go down there to see people or buildings or cities. You go down there to see animals. You see penguins and seals and birds or the albatross. They were nesting. You could walk right up within 2 or 3 feet of the nest, and they wouldn't fly. They weren't afraid. And that was a fantastic experience.
Mm-hmm. Was it very different from what you expected? I mean, I would expect it to look a lot like up here. Or up
yes, it did. It looked a lot like
mm-hmm.
because it was snow. There
mm-hmm.
was snow and ice and glaciers and that type of thing. Yes,
mm-hmm.
it was.
But no people.
But, well, there were few people.
Mm-hmm.
And the few people who go down there are mostly scientists
mm-hmm.
from the different countries all over the world who've gone down and established scientific stations down
mm-hmm.
there. Because, let's see, I think it was in 59, I've forgotten exactly, where the big nations of the world decided that they would set up stations down there, but they would not claim the territory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However, that is changing, and it's that treaty will be over with in a few years. And some of the countries now, I'm quite sure, are going to claim land. For instance, Argentina was sending some of their scientists down there, young couples who would bear children there, born in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
And going to use that, you see, as a claim then
mm-hmm.
for the land down there. Well, I hope it doesn't work out that way. I'm afraid it's going to, but
I yeah,
hope it doesn't.
They,
because they were doing a whole lot of very interesting
mm-hmm.
research down there.
As well as learning to live as a world community.
That's right. Well, however, the stations were generally separated. I
mm-hmm.
mean, they weren't clustered together like
mm-hmm.
a city or anything. They, each one was by itself. And we were unfortunate not to get into the American station because the ice pack
mm-hmm.
was too thick and we were not able to get in there at Palmer Station. So, but anyway, we've done that. And then another trip we took here a year ago, we went to Outer Mongolia, Central Asia and Outer
mm-hmm.
Mongolia,
mm-hmm.
right, and we had a very interesting trip
mm-hmm.
there,
yeah.
right, and now next fall we're hoping to go to South America and go on the Amazon River.
Cool.
So,
and
yeah.
after that, do you have any ideas?
Oh, well, I've been to Africa a number of times, but Chris has never been there, so
mm-hmm.
She'd like to go sometime and see some of their animal
mm-hmm.
reserves, you know, which are very interesting.
Africa is an interesting place because there's so much change.
Right. There are a lot of trouble spots over there, and I'm glad I went when I did.
Mm-hmm.
There were three of us who got our master's degree, two from up here in Alaska, one in Montana. We all got them the same year, 59, so we celebrated by spending 7 weeks over in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Started down at the Union of South Africa and worked our way north, ended up in Cairo, I guess, and then came on back.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. You've seen a great deal of
Yes, I've been mm-hmm. over, and I've enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're very content to stay in Fairbanks?
Oh yes, that's mm-hmm. right. Well, I've been here so long that this is home now, and this is where my friends are. I was born and raised in Seattle, but those friends have scattered now, mm-hmm. and I don't really know them. If I were to go to Seattle, I'd really be alone.
Mm-hmm. It's where your friends are, where your home is. And
yeah, that's right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
the importance of
I still have one brother who lives down mm-hmm. in the state of Washington and his family, but you know, I can't depend on them for my entire social life. I
yeah.
think I have mm-hmm. my own. So.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I like it here.
Can you think of anything over the year here, special highlights or low points in your life or related to Fairbanks that you would like to mention?
Well, I don't really remember any specific, just right off, any specific instances. It's been very interesting watching the town grow from 3,000 people who were here when I arrived to the 60,000 who live in the greater area
mm-hmm.
now, and to realize that there were 120 students in the whole high school when I first came, and now there are 5 high schools in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been very interesting. And it's been interesting to see what happened to a lot of my former students.
Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. right. And how they've become the pillars of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've enjoyed that.
You really enjoyed teaching.
Yes. Right. I enjoyed working with young people.
Mm-hmm.
I like the high school age, so it's a good thing we don't all like the same age.
Mm-hmm.
I preferred working with the older students rather than the elementary ones. Just a personal preference. No reason.
No, and it's good that everybody
right.
prefers something different.
Right.
Yes, yes. And I would think almost the high school would be much more difficult.
Well, in a lot of ways it is more difficult because they're in that area when that time in their lives when they think they're adults and they're not really yet, but
mm-hmm.
they want to be an adult and can't wait, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I still preferred them to the young people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when I first started out to teach, it was different from what it is now because in those early days, we did all kinds of things with the students on weekends
oh.
and things, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'd go hiking or we worked on putting out the school paper together or the yearbook or and a lot of activities we worked together. And the teachers nowadays don't do that.
And they miss a lot.
They miss a lot.
And the kids miss
right.
a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you get to know, when you're really involved in working with them,
no.
you get to know them very well.
That's
mm-hmm.
right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, maybe another difference is that I was single.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to hurry home to take care
yeah.
of the family. And
mm-hmm.
now the teachers are married,
mm-hmm.
the women teachers are married, and they have to hurry home, take care
mm-hmm.
of the kids, and
mm-hmm.
do all the things they've got to
yeah.
do at home.
Right.
So it's just school life is different now than it was when I first
mm-hmm.
started out.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you never regretted going into teaching?
Never regretted it. I always enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just
mm-hmm.
thoroughly. I wouldn't have traded that for anything.
Oh,
yeah.
That's very
right.
nice.
Right.
Any what big influences were there in your life? What you into teaching or makes you feel?
Well, I think probably I went into teaching maybe originally. My mother was a teacher
mm-hmm.
before she married, and my father had taught a year or two of it. He was an attorney,
mm-hmm.
but you know, going through school. He'd done some country school teaching, earned money. And so that probably influenced me in the beginning to think mm-hmm. that that's what I'd like to be. But I was always glad I did, because then they do have the summers off.
Yes,
teachers.
Right.
That's right. And so you get a time, you have some time to do some other things.
Mm-hmm. As well as feeling that you maybe are helping inform society in a small way, or helping influence, or
right.
maybe coming to it.
Well, I think maybe when I joined the Peace Corps, or when I applied for it, I thought, well, I'm getting older, and if I'm ever going to do anything different and for other people, that I better go and do it now. And I celebrated my 50th birthday while I was in the Peace Corps. So I'm glad that I was older than most of the mm-hmm. volunteers.
Well, probably gave you a different perspective. It was,
yeah,
you
know, right.
Helped a lot too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, you can. You can tell the difference between the young teachers and the older teachers. The older teachers have already been tried things and been through it, and everybody's got to try it. I mean, so it kind of goes in cycles, and the young teachers coming along, they get all these good ideas and things, and they have to try it to find out that it won't work or will work, rather than taking somebody else's word
mm-hmm.
for it.
Mm-hmm. And just like itself.
That's life itself,
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, are you still involved in any service work or anything?
Well, I'm involved in a number of organizations. I guess when I first retired, I got involved with retired teachers,
mm-hmm.
and on a national level, I was elected president of the local retired teachers. And when the first summer after I retired, they were going to have a national organization meeting in Kansas City. And so as president, I received a letter, and they said, well, we would be delighted if you'd come. Of course, we can't pay you any money or anything. But I went over and talked to Lola Tilley,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
who at that time also was very active in the National Retired Teachers Organization. And she was going to that meeting, so she invited me to share her room with her, and so I paid my own expenses and went back. And then another year or two later, then I was involved in another meeting, and one of the volunteer officers from Alaska was going to retire from her position because she wanted to remarry, and they wanted to move to Arizona or someplace down there, and so they selected me to take over. So I've been very actively involved in their work, and now with the retired teachers and the retired persons. And then I got in with the Historical Society, and I worked with that. And right now I'm working with the senior citizens over at the Senior Citizen Center. I'm on the board over there. And so I don't just sit around.
I have to stop now. We can see.